die.
9 o'clock on your community station, KBOO Portland. We're about a half hour away from Fight the Empire. Host Per Fogering will be welcoming Brazilian roving correspondent Pepe Escobar about the Brazilian political earthquake. But first, we've got Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is coming up next on The Boo.
Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. as we remember the late, great Julie Bernard, who hosted KBOO's Art Focus program for 23 years.
The people that I'm talking to, I'm approaching them the same way that I feel an ordinary listener would. I'm hoping that I'm asking the questions that an ordinary person might ask going into the gallery and looking at the work. I try to ask what that person might ask.
Remembering Julie Bernard this Friday at 11 a.m. Cezanne,
Cezanne, the original father of cubism.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'd like you to join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly, media manipulation, and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'll start with news from the Los Angeles Daily News. Porter Ranch residents who relocated because of a massive gas leak near their homes have 3 extra days before they have to return in order to be reimbursed for their housing costs, according to a letter sent by a California gas company on Wednesday. That's according to an article by Susan Abram. She wrote, "Those who left their homes to stay in hotels had until Friday to be reimbursed by SoCal Gas. The company has agreed to extend that to Monday." Methane began leaking from one of the 115 wells at a SoCal gas storage facility in nearby Aliso Canyon on October 23rd. So it's just now that this is finally starting to resolve in some way. She wrote, "Some who return home have complained of health issues. The Los Angeles County Department of Public Health received 150 complaints, prompting a door-to-door health inspection. SoCal Gas officials said the company is completing independent indoor air screening for methane and mercaptans at some homes near the storage facility." And if you're wondering what mercaptans are, that's what makes it stink, so that you know it's around. But it can be nasty when you breathe it all day. So she writes, "Results of those screenings will be shared with the health department on Friday." For me, the advantage I get in having direct access to the airwaves on community radio is that I don't have to frame my thoughts in terms of a conformist agenda. So, for example, when imperialism comes up in a discussion between the candidates Sanders and Clinton, or for that matter Trump, I find it disgusting that they tend to talk about whether the Saudis are pulling their weight, or whether Clinton has the experience and toughness to run the game. I don't give a damn about that. Instead, I get to talk about the fact that U.S. imperialism is an ongoing horror. Those drone strikes wipe out whole families. Our amazing war heroes really are brave men, usually eulogized as just having wanted to make a difference. Kill civilians and soldiers and occupy countries who never threatened you and me. Imperialism is criminal. And that's all I really care to debate about it. The Democrats and the Republicans both love imperialism, and they seem to view it as part of an American brand, a special right granted to the United States by some god or by suffering less destruction in the Second World War or something. Not sure exactly how that works, but it's still criminal. And this particular criminality is extremely, extremely expensive. One of the results of the acceleration of U.S. imperialism since 2001 is the proliferation of helicopter-fired munitions, popularly known as Hellfire missiles. For some reason, these missiles are appearing in civilian airliners. We've been handed a couple of obvious excuses and obfuscations, but it's obvious that there is some attempt at a cover-up. One missile appeared in a commercial air shipment in Cuba in 2014, and a January article in Yahoo News said that it had appeared in Cuba and was just a dummy missile. So what was it doing on a commercial plane and not a military transport? It's not like the U.S. military has a shortage of planes. The Cubans eventually sent the thing back to the relief of the U.S. military because, after all, well, more on that in a minute. But this week, another couple of Hellfire missiles showed up in Belgrade. So, quoting the National Post from Canada, Dateline Belgrade, Serbia, the Lebanese army says two missiles found on a passenger flight from Lebanon to Serbia were used for training and did not contain any explosives. The army says the missiles were being sent to the American company that produced them. It says the return was in accordance with administrative and legal measures after the training ended. Serbian authorities were investigating after a cargo package was found containing two missiles, reportedly with explosive warheads, on a passenger flight from Lebanon bound for Portland, Oregon. N1 Television said the package with two guided armor-piercing missiles was discovered Saturday by a sniffer dog after an Air Serbia flight from Beirut landed at a Belgrade airport. And I looked at the N1 report and used a translator, and that's pretty much what it said, slightly sanitized through that report through Canada. They said that they were in coffins. Since then, articles, sometimes with a snarky tone, have asserted that the missiles were just dummies for training and were being shipped to Portland, Maine, not Portland, Oregon. But they were found by explosive-sniffing dogs on a commercial aircraft. Other articles, all citing U.S. official sources, meaning our various secret police agencies, claim that there maybe could have been some odor of the battlefield that was detected by the dogs, and that would sort of explain the contradiction of having bomb-sniffing dogs detecting things that they insist were not bombs. They say that there was no propellant on them. Pretty bomb-like. Definitely take down an airliner if it were to go off. One reason why you don't ship stuff like that on commercial airliners. And that there was no warhead in them, which is also reassuring, but as I was saying, I don't see particularly why anyone would believe that. So, if you believe that U.S. training missiles that inherently contain essential information about their command and control modules are regularly shipped in commercial aircraft instead of military aircraft, and that bomb-sniffing dogs don't know the scent of bombs, and if you are unaware that contraband interceptions are typically representative of far less than 10% of actual traffic, and if you don't think that U.S. secret police lie about such things, then relax and assume that there is no smuggling of live Hellfire missiles going on at all. Nothing to see here. On the other hand, it may be that U.S.-supported anti-Assad Daesh fighters, also known as ISIS, are being given an upgrade. They may have, they already do have, U.S.-made TOW anti-tank missiles, wire-guided TOW anti-tank missiles, and history students will recall that the Iranians set aside 200 out of 1,000 TOW missiles sent to them by Ali North as part of his subversion of the hostage negotiations to be given to fundamentalist Muslim fighters in Afghanistan. And let's look at the Business Insider. Those dirty commies say that Syrian rebels are using U.S.-made TOW anti-tank missiles again in their fight against forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. This is in an article by Alex Lockie. He says, reports of the use of these advanced missiles, which are highly regulated by the CIA, have trailed off in recent months. But the use of TOWs seems to have roared back to life in February. The decrease happened after a record number of 115 TOWs recorded in October. An analyst told the Daily Beast, and quoting him, there were 73 in November, 49 in December. There were no recorded TOW launches in January until the 12th. That entire month saw only 22 in total. And speaking for myself, that's a lot of advanced U.S. missile launches. The TOW system technically portable by a couple of guys. It's actually pretty heavy, but you can mount it on a Jeep. You can mount it on a personnel carrier. Very effective against tanks. It is wire guided. It actually has a thin wire that is kind of folded up and trails behind it. And it's very similar to the Hellfire missiles, which are guided in various ways. One of the ways is a laser dot. Now, looking at one of the videos that have been sent back by the Daesh fighters, as part of the deal, they get a reload if they send back a video, shows a group of men standing around, unaware that they're being targeted by such a missile. The missile is then fired, and then you can see a high-powered laser being directed on them. Now, that's not how TOW missiles used to be made. And my first impression would be that's more likely a Hellfire missile that was fired at them, which might kind of explain what's going on with this apparent smuggling. Although I don't know that for a fact, and the video doesn't show the actual missile, and it does show a TOW-like launcher. So I'm not, I can't be positive about that. But I am bringing this up because I'm against imperialism. I'm against this war that is being conducted in and around Syria, Iraq, Somalia, on and on and on. And I want you to know that there's no reason to believe, particularly the commercial press reports, after they go to the U.S. secret police and say, oh, what really happened? And they come up with something that's very reassuring. I'm not reassured. The TOW missiles, article says, which had been provided to 39 U.S.-approved anti-Assad militias, that should make you pause right there, made a name for themselves in October of 2015 when rebels carried out what became known as a tank massacre on the regime forces. But after a few quiet months, Al-Mudik reported that there had been 16 reports of TOW missile use in just the first 3 days of February. Coinciding with these reports is a video posted by the Free Syrian Army's Northern Division, one of the CIA-backed groups, which allegedly shows them taking out a group of Russian military officials with one of the TOW missiles on February 3rd. Russia's state media outlet TASS did report on the deaths of Russian military advisors in Syria, but attributed the kills to ISIS. And as I've said over and over, it's a very conveniently blurred line between the, what do they call them this time? The U.S.-approved anti-Assad militias. Yeah, whatever. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And Mitch is on the air.
Hey, I'm really glad you added, Teresa, the part about the Hellfire missile showing up in Cuba, of all places, and the fast footwork that the Department of Defense had to come up with. But I also wanted to tip you and your readers to the edition of the Willamette Week that came out yesterday, because they have made a little bit of fun of this most recent Hellfire missiles showing up. And I didn't know that when they showed up on the Serbian flight, they were actually packaged directly. Not, you know, because Americans tend to think that the Department of Defense or some government entity makes the weapons. No, this is private industry. And so what the Willamette Week missed in noting the Cuban previous episode of Wayward Hellfire missiles, what they missed, they did make up for somewhat by noting the name of the company that manufactures them. And it's very fascinating in reading this Willamette Week dispatch, because in their kind of putting their tongue in their cheek about how out of control these imperial flooding all sides of every conflict with weapons that the American companies have been profiting from. And notice it hasn't really seemed to have done much for our economy. I don't know how many jobs it creates for these private companies, but this particular one that makes the Hellfires in Virginia, that sent the missiles to Serbia in a coffin, has more recently sent to Lebanon, because I don't know how many Americans realize that the the Obama administration is now training the Lebanese army, which, if Americans don't know, the Lebanese army may sound like the National Army of Lebanon, but in fact they defer to Hezbollah. They are afraid of Hezbollah.
Hezbollah is armed by Iran. Yeah.
Exactly. So you make a very good point there. And it's really incredible that you can't use the word imperial in news reporting. You know, otherwise you're considered a flaming lefty. And yet you, in your way, and the Willamette Week in their way, are very much making the point that this is all out of control. There are very few people profiting, but those people who are profiting are driving our policy, and our policy is totally against the public interest. So I really hope you can call up that article, that little satirical piece in this week's Willamette Week, read it on the air along with what you reported from Belgrade in Serbia.
Well, the thing is, I don't really like the Willamette article because she takes the attitude that what the FBI says is true. And I don't see any reason why she would believe the FBI over the news reports.
Oh, just put your disclaimer in there and it's still useful. It's all useful.
Sure.
And I thank you for bringing your share to the air.
Sure, why not? Yeah, good point. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I have some other topics I would like to bring up as well. The revised DARK Act, as in keeping Monsanto's actions and intentions dark, sponsored by Senator Pat Roberts, Republican, surprise, from Kansas, has been introduced as an amendment to Senate Bill 764 and would preempt the laws of Vermont, Connecticut, Maine, and Alaska that call for the labeling of genetically engineered food and substitute an unconscionable discriminatory alternative. That's as written by Andrew Kimbrell in alternet.org. The Roberts bill is so discriminatory, and I think he means against the poor, it may be unconstitutional and a violation of equal treatment under the law. Polls show that close to 90% of Americans want to know whether the foods they purchase were produced using genetic engineering. And before I go on to more with that article, I would like to remind you that we had a vote in Oregon about labeling genetic engineering, and it was very, very close. And in fact, the law would have passed, except, and I do want you to remember this point, except for the fact that a very successful and very common maneuver was employed in a close vote in the state of Oregon, which will always work, which is to dilute the votes in Multnomah County by throwing them out. This was done in broad darkness by someone I've been asking and asking and asking who, and I've not been told, or some corporation or someone. Multnomah County, other counties, other places, doesn't matter, I'm talking about Multnomah County, throws out thousands of signatures as bogus. And I've pressed them on this point. I've said, how many people, since you've thrown out thousands of signatures, how many people have you prosecuted for violating voting laws? By how many people have you prosecuted for voter fraud? They never answer. Never, never. They will not answer me. And the reason I will opine that I am not answered by Multnomah County on this is because they fully intend to throw out thousands of votes in the primary, throw out thousands of votes in the general election, and keep on throwing thousands of votes because that's how they roll. And bogus quality of what they're doing was underlined by the fact that so many people, after being alerted by myself and others that this was going on before the final count was in on the Genetic Labeling Act, actually got their vote reinstated. There was no voter fraud. No one was ever prosecuted. Thousands of votes were thrown out. This will continue until we stop it. So I want you to know that this is going on. But returning to the article about Monsanto's latest attempt to make this national, what they want to do is push a bill that rescinds states' labeling laws and bans any future state labeling laws and substitutes instead only a voluntary labeling scheme that allows this labeling to be done through QR codes. Do you use QR codes? Well, if you do, you're one of 10% of the population, maybe. Maybe 3%. And returning to the article, studies show that half of low-income people do not even have smartphones. This Senate bill shuts them out of knowing what is in their food. Almost half of rural people do not own smartphones, so they are discriminated against as well. And minorities are a disproportionate percentage of low-income and rural Americans, so this is also discriminatory against them. Two-thirds of the elderly do not own smartphones, so they won't be using QR codes or websites in the supermarket. In fact, only 64% of Americans own a smartphone. Moreover, smartphones and data plans are expensive, and nearly half of those who have smartphones have had to cancel or shut off their cell phone service for a period of time because the cost of maintaining that service was a financial hardship. Sound familiar? Even those who have the phones and service plan are not guaranteeing consistent access to the internet. And far fewer than that have ever used a QR code. Only 16% have ever scanned a QR code, and only 3% of those people do it regularly. I have a smartphone. It does cost too much. I'll probably shut it down in the next few months, and I've never used a QR code, so that would apply to me. Returning to the article, this is such obvious discrimination, it would seem sufficient in itself to deep-six the bill, but the chemical and big food lobbies, Monsanto, that's me speaking, are very powerful, he writes, and may have the votes to permanently hide what is in our food from tens of millions of Americans. And as he points out earlier in the article, Europe... And there are 65 countries that have labeling laws, but we don't, because this is how our political system works. This is not the only thing, by the way, that's hiding in the wings, waiting for you to look the other way during the major elections. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is also waiting to be okayed, and we're just going to have to watch them for that sort of thing. But the author writes, imagine the future if the Roberts bill passes this week. With conventional labeling, you walk down the grocery aisle, examining the products on the shelves, pick up each one, and quickly find the information you need on the package. Simple, fast, and effective. But imagine for each product, you have to pull out your phone, open an app if you can connect to the internet, wait for the camera to focus on the barcode, wait and see if it's genetically engineered, or wait for a web page to load, and finally read to see if the information you need is there. The bill also allows you to try to call an 800 number for information for each and every product you buy. Now, speaking for myself again, who's got time for that? So that's the latest from Monsanto Co. As I was saying, that article is in Alternet. It's by Andrew Kimbrell, and send it on the verge of passing dangerous pro-Monsanto food labeling law, as the way the URL spells out. Now, changing topics again, Robert Hunziker writes in Counterpunch, the question of whether methane is in the atmosphere as a threat to life is extraordinarily complex and generally not well understood, but yes, it is a serious threat, very serious and horribly real. Okay, but don't scientists understand this, and why aren't they speaking out? He writes, they are speaking out, but only a very few. Here's a speaking out problem. Leading climate scientists are not willing to honestly expose their greatest fears, as discovered by Amy Goodman in Democracy Now!, while at the COP21 talks in Paris this past December. And she was interviewing one of the world's leading climate scientists, Kevin Anderson of the University of Manchester of Tyndall Center for the Climate Change Research, who said, so far, and this is a quote, we simply have not been prepared to accept the revolutionary implications of our own findings. And even when we do, we are reluctant to voice such thoughts openly. Many are ultimately choosing to censor their own research, end quote. Straight away, Hunziker writes, we know from one of the world's leading authorities on climate change that climate scientists are censoring their own research. But why? And then quoting again, what we are afraid of is putting forward analysis that questions the paradigm. The economic way that we run society today, we fine-tune our analysis so it fits into the economic reality of our society, the current economic framing. Actually, our science now asks fundamental questions about this idea of economic growth in the short term, but we're very reluctant to say that. In fact, the funding bodies are reluctant to fund research that raises those questions, end quote. And that's from Democracy Now! On last December 8th. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And this article goes on to explain that The threat of the methane bomb is getting very dire indeed. And it's time for me to mention that, I suppose. But anyway, I will talk to caller 503-231-8187. And Don is on the air. And thanks, engineer, for reminding me.
Hey, Teresa, the good thing we got those dogs are doing their job.
Yeah.
Since nobody else is.
Yeah, the dogs are unaware of the political implications of their actions, I guess.
You need to watch the dogs and fire all the rest of the TSA and the cops. But think about that. What if that plane was hacked into and they slammed into a building or in Boston or someplace? And we would never know those missiles were put on there. So I'm not sure this was an accident.
Those things that kill 40 people at a time, they're funeral and wedding destroyers, notoriously.
Yeah, that's crazy. And the fact that people aren't going to get in trouble for this. But listen, hey, I was wrong, Teresa, when I told you last week Scalia was murdered. I think they gave him a zombie pill and sent him off with Barbara Olson and Kenny Boy off to Shangri-La, and that's probably where he's hanging out now. Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. He writes, Hunsaker writes, the scientists that do speak out do so in a video called Abrupt Climate Change. And he has some quotes from scientists in the video. A major concern amongst scientists, he writes, is the ongoing meltdown of the Arctic, which in turn could release massive quantities of methane, which in turn feeds into an irreversible feedback loop leading to an uncontrollable, self-perpetuating, rapid planetary temperature rise, the dreaded doomsday scenario, a fireball planet. And speaking for myself, that's what I'm talking about when I say the methane bomb. Quoting, if global average temperature rises to 2 degrees Celsius above baseline, and I'll depart from that text already and say, what was I just saying last week? 2 degrees Celsius above baseline, what that means is that interior of the large continents heats up at least twice as much, so to 4 degrees centigrade or higher, and that's where all the grain is grown, and grain is the basis for civilization. That would be sufficient to have civilization collapse. We're talking about the type of suffering that goes beyond anything we've ever seen before, well beyond what goes on in war, well beyond the plagues of the past. We have already lit the fuse on a giant methane subsea permafrost bomb in the Arctic, which can go off at any moment, end quote. And he writes, a methane monster idly sets and waiting in the shallow waters of the East Siberian Arctic shelf where hundreds to thousands of gigatons of methane could release from very shallow water. Scientists who have studied the area for over a decade say it only takes destabilization of 1% to 2% to create irreversible havoc for the planet. According to a 2013 NASA satellite observation, methane plumes in the Arctic Ocean, 150 kilometers, that's 93 miles wide, were observed bubbling up to the surface. That explains the upward sloping chart of methane into the atmosphere, a steeper slope than CO2. Quoting, we found continuous, powerful, and impressive seeping structures more than 1,000 meters in diameter in a very small area, less than 10,000 square miles. We have counted more than 100 fountains or torch-like structures bubbling through water columns and injected directly into the atmosphere from the seabed. That's a quote of Dr. Semelitov. And there's more to that, an article in counterpunch.org by Robert Hunsaker. That's H-U-N-Z-I-K-E-R. Now, coming up, we're going to be listening to Per Fagering here on KBOO Portland, and Per is going to be talking about Brazil with Pepe Escobar. And I invite you to stay tuned. We're coming to you via the transmitter on the West Hills at 90.7 FM, other frequencies in Cascadia, and going out to all the world via KBOO.FM, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
Yeah, busy Thursday morning on the Boo. We're about a half hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. But up next, it is Fight the Empire, and host Per Fagering will be welcoming today Brazilian roving correspondent Pepe Escobar, talking about the Brazilian political earthquake. That's coming up right after this on KBOO. By the way, it takes all of us to keep KBOO strong. Did you know you can give gifts of stocks to KBOO? We are able to quickly turn these donations into support for the important daily work of KBOO. How do you do this? Call 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.org for information on how to make a stock gift or a gift of appreciated securities. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.